Imagine stepping out on a scorching summer day.
Yeah.
Your ice cream, just gone, melted in minutes. Or maybe a frosty winter morning where your breath turns to mist right in front of you.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
So what's really going on there? It all comes down to temperature, doesn't it? This kind of hitter force.
Absolutely. It shapes so much around us.
But how do we actually, you know, put numbers to it? And why can two places feel so different temperature-wise, even if it's the same time of day?
Good questions.
So, okay, this deep dive is all about getting you well-informed on this. We're going to unpack how we measure temperature, understand its effects, and really see its role everywhere based on the sources you sent over.
Sounds good. Let's dive in.
All right. So we all feel it. We talk about temperature constantly. It's hot. It's cold. But scientifically, what is temperature? Really?
Yeah.
Beyond just that feeling.
Right. Well, what's fascinating is that temperature isn't just a feeling. It's a quantifiable measure. It actually tells us the hotness or coldness of something. And it does that by reflecting the average kinetic energy of its particles.
Kinetic energy. So movement.
Exactly. Think of tiny particles inside everything, always vibrating, moving around. When they move faster, the substance feels hotter, its temperature is higher. When they slow down, it feels colder, temperature drops. So temperature gives us a precise number for that degree of heat.
So it's not the same as heat then. I hear those used interchangeably sometimes.
That's a really key distinction. Yeah, they're related but different. Heat is the total energy transferred between objects because of a temperature difference. Temperature is more like the intensity, the average energy level.
Gotcha.
And that difference is why heat always flows naturally from a warmer thing to a colder thing.
Okay, that makes sense.
And just to be clear, cold isn't really a thing that flows in. It's just, well, the absence of heat energy or a lower level of it.
Right, less energy, less movement. So it's this invisible dance of particles.
Yeah.
And like you said, this isn't just theory, is it?
Not at all.
Understanding this particle motion, it's crucial for weather, for materials, like why metal expands, why water freezes.
Exactly. It underpins so much of the physical world we see and don't see.
Okay, so that's the what. Now, how about the how? How do we actually measure this hotness or coldness, put a number on it? That's where scales come in, I guess.
Precisely. We needed ways to quantify it. Early attempts, like Galileo's thermoscope back around 1593, were a start. Kind of basic, though, affected by air pressure, too. It really took off in the 18th century. You had Fahrenheit, who brought in his scale and the mercury thermometer in 1714.
Ah, Fahrenheit. Still right. Used here in the U.S.?
Yep. And then Celsius came along in 1742 with his scale, which most of the world uses now.
Right.
So today, we basically rely on three main scales. There's Celsius, or degrees C, super common. Water freezes at 0 degrees Celsius, boils at 100. Nice round numbers.
Very logical.
Then Fahrenheit, degrees Fahrenheit. Freezing is 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Boiling is 212 degrees Fahrenheit. A bit different, yeah, but common in the States.
Definitely.
And finally, Kelvin, just K, no degrees symbol. That's the SI unit, the standard for science.
Okay, Kelvin, why is that the science standard?
Because it starts at absolute zero. Zero K. That's the theoretical point where all particle motion just stops, completely ceases.
Okay.
On Kelvin, water freezes at 273.15 K and boils at 373.15 K. So it's directly linked to that fundamental energy level.
That's fascinating. So if Kelvin is the sort of absolute scale, why do we still use Celsius and Fahrenheit so much day to day? Is it just habit?
That's a great point. It's partly habit, sure, but also practicality. Kelvin is perfect for science, where you need that absolute reference. But for everyday life, Celsius, with its 0 to 100 for water, feels quite intuitive for many people.
Yeah, it does.
And Fahrenheit, well, its degrees are smaller, right? So maybe a change from 70 to 71 degrees Fahrenheit feels like a smaller, perhaps more relatable step than a full degree Celsius change for weather. Some people find it gives a bit more granularity for describing how it feels outside without needing decimals.
Okay. Like, so each has its place.
Exactly. They're designed for different contexts, from the lab bench to your weather app. And you can convert between them easily enough with formulas.
Right. And hey, just a quick fact flash for everyone listening. Absolute zero, that point where atoms theoretically stop moving. That's minus 273.15 Celsius or minus 459.67 Fahrenheit. Zero Kelvin.
Yep, that's the floor.
Scientists have gotten incredibly close in labs, apparently. But hitting it exactly, still a huge challenge.
A really fascinating frontier in physics, absolutely.
So we have the scales.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about the tools, the thermometers themselves. How do these gadgets actually work?
Okay, so a thermometer is just a device to measure temperature. The classic ones, the ones you picture with the red line going up, they work on thermal expansion.
Thermal expansion, things getting bigger when they're hot.
Exactly. The liquid inside, traditionally mercury, but now often alcohol or something similar, or it's digital. It expands when it gets warmer and takes up more space. In a narrow tube, that means the column rises.
Makes sense.
When it cools, the liquid contracts, takes up less space, and the column falls. Simple principle, really effective.
And the sources mentioned two main types, right? Clinical and laboratory.
That's right. Let's break those down. First, the clinical thermometer. You know, the one for taking your temperature when you're sick, sometimes called a doctor's thermometer.
Yep. Going at home. Probably digital now, though.
Yeah, digital is very common now for safety and speed, but the traditional glass ones had a bulb at the bottom, a narrow tube, and liquid inside. The really clever bit was a tiny kink or constriction just above the bulb.
A kink. Why?
That kink stops the liquid from flowing straight back down into the bulb as soon as you take it out of your mouth or wherever it holds the reading.
Ah, so you actually have time to see the temperature.
Precisely. Gives you time for an accurate reading. Because they're, for bodies, their range is pretty small, usually like 35 to 42 degrees Celsius, just around normal body temp, which is about 37 C.
Okay, and definitely not for checking boiling water then.
Absolutely not. They break. They're specialized. And remember, only those old mercury ones needed shaking down to reset the reading below the kink. Digital ones just reset with a button.
Right. Okay, so that's clinical. What about laboratory thermometers?
Okay, laboratory thermometers. These are the workhorses in science labs, measuring solutions, reactions, that kind of thing.
So more heavy duty.
In terms of range, yes. They're usually longer, maybe glass tubes again, often with mercury or alcohol. But crucially, they don't have that kink.
No kink. Why not?
Because in a lab, you often want to see the temperature as it changes. You want the liquid to respond immediately, up or down. So no kink allows that instant response.
Oh, okay. Real-time reading.
Exactly.
Got
But
it.
it means you generally have to read the temperature while the thermometer bulb is still in the substance you're measuring. Take it out, and the reading will change immediately.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
Their range is much wider too, maybe minus 10 up to 110 degrees Celsius, typically. Depends on the specific thermometer, of course. And they're fragile, so you handle them carefully. Don't hold the bulb. Keep the bulb off the bottom or sides of the container for an accurate liquid temperature reading.
So it really boils down to using the right tool for the right job, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You wouldn't use a lab thermometer under your tongue.
Definitely not.
And a clinical one is useless for checking a chemical reaction. Understanding those differences, like the kink, helps you use them correctly and get accurate results. Like in those activities mentioned in the sources, reading different thermometers for different tasks.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Okay, let's zoom out a bit now. We've talked about measuring temperature in specific things, like our bodies or a beaker. But what about just the air around us, air temperature?
Right, air temperature or atmospheric temperature. It's simply how hot or cold the air is at a particular place in time. Super fundamental for meteorology, the science of weather and climate.
And what makes it change so much, day to night, season to season?
A lot of factors play into it. Time of day is a big one. The sun heats the Earth's surface, which then heats the air, so daytime is warmer. Nights are cooler because the Earth radiates that heat back out into space. Then there's the season, obviously linked to the Earth's tilt.
It could give us a longer days in summer, shorter in winter.
Exactly. And your location on Earth matters: latitude, altitude, proximity to oceans. And of course, weather systems moving through fronts, pressure systems, they all shift air temperature.
So it's pretty dynamic.
Yeah.
And beyond just knowing whether to grab a jacket, why is tracking air temperature so vital?
Oh, it's critical in so many areas. Weather forecasting is maybe the most obvious. Predicting heat waves, cold snaps, storms, it all hinges on temperature data.
Okay.
Then think about agriculture. Farmers need temperature info to know when to plant, when to harvest, how to protect crops from frost or extreme heat.
Yeah, crucial for food supply.
Absolutely. And public health. Knowing the temperature helps officials issue warnings for things like heat stroke risk in summer or hypothermia risk in winter, keeping people safe.
Makes sense.
And don't forget energy use. How much power do we need for heating or air conditioning? That's directly tied to the outside air temperature. It affects demand, costs, grid management.
Wow. Okay. It really ripples out everywhere.
It really does. Understanding those daily and seasonal swings, like the warmer, often more humid summers versus the colder, often drier winters with potential frost or snow, it helps us plan, adapt, build resilient cities, manage resources effectively. It's all interconnected.
And this ties back to those case studies you share, doesn't it? Like the sick pet mystery needing accurate body temperature, or the restaurant needing precise temperatures for food safety.
Exactly. Those scenarios really highlight how vital accurate temperature measurement is across the board for health, safety, just making things work properly.
So wrapping things up a bit, we've really unpacked temperature today. We've seen it's fundamentally about particle motion, that average kinetic energy. Mm-hmm. We've looked at the scales we use, Celsius, Fahrenheit, Kelvin, and the specific tools like clinical and lab thermometers, each with their own design, like that crucial kink.
Right.
And we've seen how air temperature affects literally everything from farming to forecasting to how much energy we use.
It's pretty fundamental stuff.
It really is.
You know, this brings up an interesting final thought maybe for you listening. Remember that activity, possibly from the sources, about putting one hand in cold water and one in hot, then both into lukewarm water.
Yeah, the lukewarm water feels different to each hand, right?
Exactly. It feels warm to the cold hand and cool to the hot hand. It shows our sense of touch judges temperature relatively. It compares to what it felt just before. It doesn't give an absolute number like a thermometer.
That's true. Our perception can be tricked.
So the question is, given that our bodies are constantly sensing temperature this way, relatively, how might knowing this, knowing that your feel is subjective, change how you interpret your environment? Or maybe how you think about staying comfortable, rather than just trusting that initial, possibly biased feeling?
That's a really interesting point. Relying less on just, ooh, it feels cold, and maybe thinking more about the actual conditions or what your body really needs.
Something to ponder, perhaps?
Definitely. It just shows even something as basic as hot and cold has these fascinating layers of science underneath. Keep exploring it. And thanks for taking this deep dive with us today.